Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
We're back for the Tuesday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to, need to, or just want to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything that you need, head over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, those blogs go up on Wednesdays, Saturday morning, so you can look for something popping up there tomorrow at some point in time. But of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. Don't forget, we also have the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is Sports Time Radio. Now, you can find Dan and I on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at
Dan the Man or 3A.
All right. Now, you know, obviously, Dan, there's been a ton of stuff that's happened since you and I last talked here on the podcast, or actually I think talked at all on Thursday. But I wanted to start off with something just a little, you know, outside of what we normally talk about, but something you and I are very familiar with, and that's professional wrestling. As, you know, a lot of people know who follow it, WWE will be moving the SmackDown show to Fox. I don't know the official start date on that, but apparently it's all set up. It's going to air on Friday night. I found it interesting, Dan, that just recently Fox has more or less kind of told WWE that they want Ronda Rousey moved to the SmackDown brand. You know, she's currently the women's champion on Raw. Because they feel she has the name value to get them, of course, you know, the ratings they're looking for. WWE hasn't mentioned if they're going to do this there yet, because obviously Raw is their centerpiece show. You know, it's 3 hours compared to where SmackDown is two, and it's really the show they feature. Like, I read the results of the Survivor Series pay-per-view where they actually face each other, and I think Raw won all of the matches except maybe one or two of them. So it's definitely the feature show. I guess, you know, it's kind of two-parter, Dan. A, do you agree with Fox that they need her to be moved there? And B, do you see WWE kind of giving in and moving her there?
I agree, especially since they do all that UFC stuff. So their viewers, you know, would be able to find Ronda a lot quicker. And honestly, I think, you know, for WWE, this is the first time they're on, I mean, truly on network cable television. So I don't know why you'd want to fight this one.
Yeah, it seems kind of, almost relatively simple. But, you know, along those same lines, are you surprised Fox didn't ask, you know, and I know he doesn't make a ton of appearances, but are you surprised they didn't ask for Brock Lesnar? Because, you know, he's UFC related and, you know, has a name that fans would, you know, people would recognize outside of the wrestling business.
I wouldn't think that some of the more, I don't know if you use the word hardcore, but people who really follow this sport would really be excited for him. You know, kind of with the controversy and things like that. So I don't think he makes that big of a difference. I think it might actually hurt their viewership.
Yeah, and now, you know, the other thing I you know, just wanted to ask you here while we're on this topic, do you think this is possibly a case where she's the only actual name they recognize, because, you know, a lot of the problems wrestling has had, obviously, with networks is the fact that, you know, they don't really follow this. And, like, when WWE got all that money to go to, was it Saudi Arabia or wherever they had some issues with, the names these guys were asking to see were the guys like, you know, like I believe Hulk Hogan's name came up. And, of course, you know, Triple H, The Undertaker, and Shawn Michaels actually had to appear. You know, these are guys who, with the exception of Triple H, are out of mainstream WWE, and we rarely see now, but that's what they remember. Do you think that it could have been this case, and she was just the only name they knew looking at the roster?
Well, I think that, but I do think, you know, even from listening to some of the local radio guys, that, you know, some of the writers and, you know, broadcasters are actually into it a little more than you'd expect. I don't know how far, you know, I don't know if you go so far as call them marks, but they're definitely into it. And, you know, I think as far as executives go, Ronda Rousey would be the name that would recognize. You know, for, you know, the Triple H and Shawn Michaels and all that stuff, you know, you've got to imagine execs and Fox really weren't in tune with the whole Attitude Era and could care less, you know, about their popularity as it comes to WWE.
Yeah, I know.
Kind of going back to Brock Lesnar, though, he's more considered a WWE guy, I would say, than a UFC guy.
Yeah, well, he should be. I mean, his UFC run was very, very short compared to his time in WWE. But, I mean, you know, he was heavyweight champion, so, you know, in UFC. Yeah, well, you know, I had an incident years ago when we were running a show. We ran a local college here, I think even before you and your cousin got started this morning. And, you know, we were talking to him about guys they could, you know, we could bring a guy in. You know, it's up to them. They were paying for the show. You know, we gave him a price list to guys. And, you know, this was a guy who was, you know, a little older than me at the time. And this was quite a few years ago. The only two guys he knew on the list were Tito Santana and King Kong Bundy. So it was just kind of like, okay, well, this guy obviously hasn't watched wrestling in a while, so, you know, that was, we ended up with Tito because Bundy was booked. So there you go.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's even, you know, I remember the guys at the later company, if you book Sting, I'm retired, you know, I'm giving it up, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And when they were trying to do that, they were, you know, Sting was making his runs back, you know, starting to make his run back in TNA, and they were thinking about booking him. And, you know, I flat out told the owner, I was like, dude, have you watched him on TV? I go, if you're going to book him to wrestle, I go, you know, book him for autographs. But I go, as far as you're concerned, I'm like, the WCW guys were more popular amongst, quote, wrestling fans, not the people that are watching and coming to our shows today. I go, you're not going to make the money that you think you're going to make. This is not going to happen.
No, not.
And I go, you know, what was it, 2005, 6, 7? I don't, you know, over 10 years ago. I'm like, you're not going to make the money that you're thinking you're going to make. I go, and if you put him in the ring, I go, he can't hang. I go, you know, I know he's, you know, been king of, you know, WCW, and, you know, I don't have any room to say this. I go, but at his point right now, trying to come back, I go, he couldn't hang with me.
Sting, who actually did call my house once before any phone calls when we tried to book him. So,
yeah. Yeah, but, you know, it did take off, and I think he did get back into shape. But at the time, I was like, dude, you guys are crazy if you're going to book him to wrestle. He's just going to embarrass himself. And you guys.
Yeah, you know, and actually the fun part back when we were wrestling together was the funniest part was, you know, I was living with a bunch of roommates, but I got all the phone calls. I had the school line for the training, and that was the number we used when we wanted contact, and it was just watching my roommates mark out when all these different guys would call me. So,
yeah, well, my cousins said the same thing when, Anarchy, his company was pretty hot for, that time being. He's like, I'm checking my voicemail, and it's, I got Rikishi calling me and Rhino. And, he listens to some other guys, but, the first one I remember is when he brought up Rikishi, because he's like, all I hear is, hey, brother, I heard you're the owner. I'm looking for some booking, something like that. So he's like, it kind of blew him away, too.
Raven was like, hey, I'm going to be in town doing this Friday night thing. I hear you're running Saturday. Give me a call back and let's talk about, me getting on the show. So that still wasn't as cool as Tracy Smother showing up at a show to talk to Shane Douglas and then remembering him and I worked together about 15 years ago and asking me if I could find a spot for him. Oh, but all right, enough. Yeah, we got a boatload of stuff going down, Dan. We got two official Mariner trades and what everybody is saying, the best free agent pitcher now off the market. And your guy Dave Roberts got his extension. Where do you want to start?
Wait, did you say Dave Roberts, Dodgers manager?
Dave Roberts officially got his extension. I believe it was yesterday. Through 2022, he is signed to be the Dodgers manager. So,
yeah, well, it's really good at following the marching orders. So, why give up on a guy who's going to do that for you?
Doesn't look like they have any contract details or anything. That brought up an interesting thing I heard Chris Rose mention. We got the winter meetings kicking off on Sunday. And, all these guys do interviews and all that kind of stuff. You think, like when the Dodgers, whoever's playing their general manager at the time steps up, do you think any writer is going to have the Canuck to ask him about that situation? And I guess, is it appropriate for one of those guys to ask him about it?
Ask the general manager or Roberts?
The general manager, because obviously, it's already been mentioned to Roberts a time or two, but, the managers or even, vice president of baseball operations, however you want to look at it, a lot of these guys do meetings at the winter meetings. I mean, do you think somebody Canucks it up enough and says, hey, are you buying that from a school? Oh, no, you're still hanging around.
Maybe a national guy, but no, I don't. I think part of the problem is, once you get in, you're so fearful of losing that job that, asking the real hard questions isn't allowed. But the journalistic portion of sports writing and covering, the game doesn't, you're not allowed to do it.
You don't think some blogger, blogger or podcaster or,
if they can get in, but they don't really let those guys in. So.
I did notice. I know they cracked down on them a lot more since, those guys really ask tough questions, because they had nothing to lose. So.
Well, it was only certain teams. Like, we had former guests on that was down in Houston that, the Astros were letting these guys in. But at the same time, the one guy in particular, he is also like a season ticket holder, diehard fan. So I wasn't sure how to take his, his coming in to the team. Because they were at the time when there was a transition and they had just moved over to the AL. West. They just got the new jerseys, the unis. They were drawing like five people a show or a game. So, you know, they were pretty much opening it up to everybody and anybody, where you and I both know here in Chicago, it doesn't matter how bad the Sox are doing or the Cubs, neither side is going to let anyone else, anyone isn't going to let anyone in without the credentials, even if
right.
they are bloggers and, you know, high price, even a really great show or whatever that has a lot of likes and listens and all that. And the other part of the journalistic portion is, the guys like, and I don't know if Dan Patrick would have been one of them, but, you know, maybe Colin Hurd would have been one who would open his mouth and, you know, maybe have asked questions that, you know, you and I would like to ask. You know, he's already got the big bucks. He's got the LA show on Dodgers
yeah.
radio, you know, the channel that the Dodgers play on. So, he's not going to this stuff anymore. He's not doing this. He's just standing at his, you know, soapbox and screaming out what he thinks and getting paid millions of dollars on Fox TV and, you know, the AM channel in LA. So it would be surprising if, you know, they came out and, you know, asked the tough questions. But, you know, as you're referring to, what would, if you were able to go there and ask the Dodgers organization, I don't know if you're talking about Roberts himself or the GM or the president, what would it be that you would throw at them?
Well, you know, I would want to know, you know, if it was true. I mean, did they give Dave Roberts the batting order, and was he more or less told who was available and who was not available? I mean, you know, that kind of seems to be the burning question since the World Series, right? Since some of that news leaked out. So, you know, that's the question I would want answered. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I don't think there's much else I would care about really with the Dodgers off season. You know, as of right now, that's number one for me. I mean, I probably would need to phrase it better, but, you know, I would need some time to work on it. But, yeah, isn't that what you would want to know?
Oh, yeah. And like you said, if, you know, we were both in there, you would ask it one way and then I would just ask the same exact question another way because it wouldn't be answered. It's almost like, prior to this week's Bears game, you know, all the questions to Mitchell Trubisky, they basically asked him the same thing over and over. Essentially, the question was, are you ready to go, or do you feel you're ready to go? And he had to, you know, should you be playing? And he had to just say, oh, I feel great. I'm still, you know, whatever the line was. And they almost caught him. I almost caught him up
yeah.
because he's young. But, you know, he caught his words before it slipped out that he was ready to go and he didn't need to rest off. And, you know, this was one of the things that kind of backfired on Nagy this weekend, but it was those damn interceptions. But coming back to baseball, I mean, like I said, I think the sucky part is that a lot of these guys are in fear of their jobs and they can't ask the hard questions because then you're
yeah.
shunned or blackballed or whatever.
Yeah, that's definitely tough. You know, and I know, obviously, they would never answer that. But, you know, it is kind of the big burning question now. And, you know, now especially that he has this extension. And, you know, I mean, we're looking at, what, 4 more years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, you know, and I know the players love Roberts, and, I've heard a lot of people say he's a good manager. You know, a lot of the media, you know, the media seems to like him. Even the national media seems to like him. But, yeah, I just kind of want to know, you know, was it just something they did for the postseason, or do they do this every day? You know, is this the thing every day? Does he come in every day and he's got a lineup? Here's what you're going with today, Dave. You know, this is what Sabermetric says for you to do. Thought it was, you know, they went with a sabermetric lineup, and, you know, even when our guy Kiki didn't produce, who, you know, you and I have always loved as a versatile guy, they stayed with him when he shouldn't have been in the lineup, but, you know, they left him in there. I mean, did he go 0 for the World Series or pretty close to it? And
he never
came out of the lineup.
No, well, in the games he started, he went 0 for, like, 10.
Yeah. You know, but yeah, when it was, you know, pistol in the play, I mean, you know, guys like, you know, I mean, there were guys like Cody Bellinger on the bench, and I get it. There's a left-hander pitching, but man, you know, with Kiki struggling, I'd like to see Cody's bat out there. So I, you know, again, and I, you know, I mean, I think, you know, in a situation like that, that hurt the Dodgers because, you know, you were basically instructed this is how you'll run the team, and these are the guys we're going to go with. You know, when, you know, obviously, and then Roberts has to answer the questions when, you know, you got to wonder if maybe he was thinking, do I need to pull the plug on Kiki or, you know, I mean, like there were those situations where, especially against the Brewers, where, you know, David Freese would get the start in the game and then the Brewers would make that quick pitching change and the Dodgers would go right to their bench. You know, now if I'm David Freese, I'm probably a little ticked off because here I got one at bat. And, you know, I know at least one game he got a hit or he may have even homered. And he was taken out of the game because that's what Sabermetrics said to do.
Well, it's the, you know, the baseman that they Paul Dozier. Did I just make that name up?
Yes, it's Brian Dozier.
So, Brian Dozier. You know, I actually forgot he was on the team when he came to the postseason.
Yeah. You know, and I can't blame you for that. I mean, he was non-existent. You know, and I know the Dodgers did have their hitting struggles, but, you know, like I thought, especially playing an AL team, we would see a little more of Matt Kemp. You know, I mean, the guy had a fantastic year for him, but sabermetrically it didn't line up, so he sat on the bench. You know, I know he got to DH a few times, but, you know, it's like, here you go. It doesn't matter what you did for us during the year, Matt. This computer says these are bad for you, so we're not going to play you. Great, thanks. I'll just sit here. You guys pay me. I'll watch us lose the World Series because you're going to listen to some freaking, you know, some logarithm or printout that, you know, your computer spit out instead of, you know, going with a hot guy or, you know, it's just like, good Lord.
You know? Well, and you're forgetting the other part of that sentence, though, is watch you lose the World Series. Again,
yeah. So, well, he wasn't there the first time. He was in Atlanta last year. So,
yeah.
You know, that's just one of those odd things. But, you know, All right, here we go, Dan. Patrick Corbin signs today, and after all the talk that he's going to the Yankees and all this other stuff, and the Phillies are going to grab him. It's the Washington Nationals who go 6 years and $140 million. So you're adding Corbin to Scherzer, Strasburg, and whoever else they're going to mix into that rotation. You know, I heard a couple people say that this already makes the Nationals the favorite next year. I think we should probably wait until all the moves are done and we have a general idea of what these teams are going to look like. But are you buying this here? I think it's a good situation for Corbin because he doesn't have to go out and be a true number one now with Scherzer ahead of him. But how much do you think this improves the Nationals?
I think it gives them a big boost. But, you know, they're still alive and are they going to re-sign Bryce?
Well, you know, apparently people are saying now that this ends the Bryce Harper talk.
Oh, no, was that 6 years?
6 years and $140 million.
Ooh-wee.
So, you know, I mean, are you ready to put them back on top of the National League East?
No, because they should have been on the top last year, hands down, without a doubt. And you know, I don't know if it's the front office or what the malfunction is with that team, but you know, I mean, what are we looking at? This is the sixth year. that they should have, you know, kind of gone all the way. I mean, I think there was like at least three or four seasons where you, I, or Schaumburg Stew picked them to win the World Series. And Schaumburg Stew kind of picked them consecutively until the Cubs won. So, it's so hard to say, but $140 million, what did that break down to? Did you get that?
Let me see if they have it broken down over the terms here. It doesn't look like in this article they have it. It breaks down to $23.33 million a year, but I don't know if that is how the contracts shake out. They don't have it year to year.
Well, you know, and you say it takes them out of the running for good old Bricey, but coming into this season, they're at $96 million. And I'm just doing the double take. Oh, yeah, they don't even have his contract details in Spotrac yet. They just do have him listed. So let's just say 96 plus 96. I messed up, but, you know, 23 plus 96, go figure that out. What is that, like 115? So 119. So they're roughly at 120 million next year. That still leaves a lot of wiggle room for Bryce Harper.
Well, see, this article here has them at 188 for next season. So they're already over the luxury tax.
Are they? I thought it went up to 190 or 200 this year.
Yeah, well, as of, you know, whoever I got the article here in front of me, yeah, they said it puts them about $17.9 million south of the luxury line. So maybe does south mean under? Yeah.
Yeah.
South means under. So they're a little under. So yeah, it they're saying here, okay, as I go on, I guess I should have read both paragraphs while you were talking. 206 is the luxury line this year. So that's where they're sitting. So yeah, I guess, you know, signing Bryce would probably put them over, but I don't think it would put them over by, you know, I don't know, too much. What, 10 million, maybe 15 million, depending on what he ends up getting. So
yeah, but you can structure the deal. You know, that was one of the interesting things that I found with Alex Cobb was, you know, I think he's averaging like 14 million a year or something, regardless of whatever his pay is, he isn't getting that much, you know, through this season, through the end of his contract. I think he ends in 2023. And then his contract is deferred. So from 2023 through, I think it's like 26 or 27, he's still going to be get paid like $4 or $5 million a year.
Yeah, you know, they can kind of work this out, you know, how it goes. But, you know, I mean, the Nationals have had a really solid off season now. You know, I mean, Corbin was the big starting pitcher fish. I don't know if I was as high on him as everybody else was. You know, they added two really good veteran catchers in Yan Gomes and Kurt Suzuki. And I was laughing after they made the trade for Yan Gomes. People were kind of going, well, what are they going to do with both of these guys? Well, they're going to do exactly what you think you're going to do. They're going to platoon them because the guy needs to be out there 120 games. So that's pretty obvious. You know, and then they helped the bullpen out. They added Trevor Rosenthal, who, if he's healthy, could be a big add. And then they picked up Kyle Barraclough from the Marlins, as they're still wholesaling down there, who's a big-time setup guy. So, you know, they're cruising right along. And, you know, I mean, even without Harper, they still have a pretty good offensive lineup. You know, and I guess if they do decide to go the other way on him, we'll finally get to see Victor Robles play every day, who I think they've been talking about for 4 years.
Yeah, I think that's why my numbers are off when I was looking at the contract, because I haven't gotten to the NL East yet, and our sheet, our tracking methods, but yeah, they don't, of all those signings, they don't have any, you know, contract details listed or numbers, so that's where, you know, prior to all these signings, that's why they're still sitting at $96 million for the year.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, that was, you know, obviously that was the big free agent signing, and then the, finally,
these are huge.
Yeah, the damn Mets-Mariners trade is official. It works out that the Mets are going to get Robinson Cano. They get Edwin Diaz along with it, and then they're going to, the Mariners are also going to send $20 million to help offset some of the cost of, you know, good old Cano's contract there. In return, the Mets get two veterans, or the Mariners get two veterans. They get Jay Bruce and Anthony Swozat, along with three prospects, I guess really two big-time prospects and one minor leaguer. They get Jared Kelnick and Justin Dunn, who are supposed to be prospects in this, and then the other guy is a right-hander by the name of Gerson Bautista. You know, I hate what the Mariners are doing because, you know, I'm crazy when teams go through all this crap and, you know, blah, 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 we're going to tear down to rebuild, and yeah, here we go. So we'll see what happens there. But I don't know if this deal makes the Mets as good as everybody seems to be kind of jumping on. Do you?
I think it, you know, what really boasts them and what's kind of the big part of the deal is the closer.
Yeah.
You know, so that kind of helps them out a lot. I will say, Big Jack, I'm sorry. Jay Bruce Mariner shirt for Christmas. They haven't made it yet, so. you know, I looked it up right away when I saw that deal yesterday, but yeah, sorry, Big Jack, it's not available for you yet. I think that'd be the only guy you'd be able to root for or have any kind of interest on that team for next season, maybe him and D. Gordon, but I think
well,
the remains to be seen.
They did confirm another trade that we can get to when we're done talking about this one. So,
yeah. So I mean, it, you know, it kind of answered the questions that we had when it came to the Mets. I think you and I both eliminated the Yankees from the possible deal from day one. We entertained the you know, the Mets a little bit more. And I think one of the things that what this solidifies is that Noah Syndergaard and Jacob DeGrom are going nowhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, no rebuild for the, I went for the Giants, for the Mets. So I think it does make them a little bit interesting. And, you know, like you mentioned that people are saying with the Patrick Corbin deal, that just, you know, the Nationals are right back at number one. While I don't think this puts, you know, makes the Mets, you know, hands down favorite to win the East, but I think now you have four teams really competing, and with pitching or not, I mean, the Nationals have had the best pitcher in baseball, or at least the National League for the last what, three or four seasons, Max Scherzer, who should just been handed the Cy Young for the last couple of years without any competition, but you know. Even though he deserved it, he didn't get it. You know, they still haven't really proven themselves either when it came to winning. So I don't give this division to the Mets, but I also don't give it to the Nationals. And I do think it makes, you know, a lot more competitive to where, you know, Derek Jeter is just going to have to show up to every game and sign some autographs if he wants people to come to his game.
Yeah, what I find interesting is the way they rearranged the Mets now that they landed this scientist. You know, they plugged Cano right away in second base, you know, even a 36-year-old guy, you know, instead of leaving Jeff McNeil there and maybe Snell playing first, they actually shuffled McNeil to third and Todd Frazier over to first base. I don't know if that's their best. Defensive alignment. You know, I know Cano has a little experience at first base. I think they might be better with, you know, McNeil at second, Frazier at third, and just let Cano kind of figure out first base as we're going along here, don't you?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. And the point I didn't make was that the one question we had, of course, when, you know, the whole Cano to Mets was kind of talking about was the Jay Bruce contract and how that worked out. So obviously we see how that worked out so they can kind of offset their dollars. But I think it's worth a shot to maybe keep Cano at second for the season just to see how it goes and, you know, maybe adjust afterwards to see if he's better off at first base. But then again, I hope that's what spring training is for, right? And maybe it'll, you know, they know how Cano can play at second. So maybe he'll get some playing time at first, and then he'll lead off.
Yeah, and you know, the first contract was kind of financials. But to be fair, he's only going to make $14 million in the next couple of years, so his contract is very manageable. And you got to wonder, how long you think he's staying in Seattle? You got to figure they're looking to turn around and move both him and Swarzak, right?
I mean, honestly, that's the first thing I thought was, you know, will he even make it to spring training and into a Mariners uniform?
You know, either of them, you know, Swarzak is one of the most touted setup men. You know, I know he was hurt quite a bit last year, so he pitched in 29 games. The year before that with the White Sox and the Brewers, he made 70 appearances with a 2.33 ERA. So I can't see either of these guys being long for a rebuilding team because they're both, you know, Swarzak just turned 33 and Bruce has got to be right in that area by now, right? Let me get his age here really quick. He's actually going to be 32 in April. So, you got to think that's something they're looking to, you know, to maybe, you know, maybe get something in the works right there. And, you know, we'll have to see how it goes. But not only did the Mariners make that trade, Dan, they also finalized the trade with the Phillies. And this one ended up looking, obviously, Jean Segura is the main piece going to Philadelphia. They're also going to get a couple of relievers. They're going to get Juan Nicasio, a righty, and James Pazzo, who I believe is a lefty. I got to look real quick and double check that one. Yeah, he's a left-hander, so they get a little mix of relievers there. In return, Seattle gets Carlos Santana and infield prospect J.P. Crawford. Now, you know, Philadelphia signed Santana to a pretty big deal last offseason. You know, he's 32. He'll be 33. And two more years with an option. I get 20.3 this year, 20.8 next year, and it's 17.5. You know, Crawford was supposed to be the Phillies shortstop last season and just couldn't stay healthy. Ended up playing in just 49 games and just couldn't get it going, hitting .214. You know, obviously he'll get a bigger chance with the Mariners now to be that everyday guy again if he can stay healthy. You know, I actually like this trade for the Phillies a lot, Dan. You know, Segura is a quality shortstop and can hit in the leadoff spot if they need him to. And Nicasio has been a really good right-handed power reliever at times. I know he had some issues, and I don't remember if it was in Pittsburgh or maybe St. Louis. He had a rough year with Seattle last year, 1-6 with a 6 ERA, but, you know, like in 2007, he played 76 games and had a 2.61 ERA. So, you know, I think they got a really, really helpful deal here. But I guess the first question that popped up, Dan, and I was a little surprised by this, are they out of the Manny Machado Derby now that they've got an established shortstop like Segura?
Are they out of the Machado deal, or are they into the Bryce Harper?
Right. Well, you know, according to them, they were always in on Bryce Harper. But, you know, you just wonder, you know, does locking up a guy like Segura, who can play, you know, second and has played some outfield, so I guess it doesn't totally lock them out on a Machado deal, but maybe they just, that was kind of blowing smoke and their target all along was Harper?
Could be. I mean, like you said, Segura does have the experience at second base. While he may have the experience at outfield, I don't think you'd want to really play him that much in the outfield. That would be, you know, one of those 13th inning moves because you got a pretty guy here and there. But, you know, I still think, you know, like you said, it could be, you know, them blowing smoke and Harper was the guy they're going after. I mean, they were able to sign a former national before, and it really upset the crowd. Or no, that was vice versa. Former Philly went to the national. So, you know, I think they're going to go after the best deal they can. And I mean, I think we both agreed that, you know, Machado might be a better fit for them and might do some more, you know, play better for them. But, you know, who knows?
At least now they have the option that if they can't sign Machado, they've got their guy.
Yeah, you know, and in reality, the best part of this deal for the Phillies may be the fact that they'll be able to get Rhys Hoskins out of the outfield where he was just terrible, and he'll be able to go back to first base now that Santana is, you know, has moved on. So, you know, that would be the biggest plus out of everything.
Well, and I was always kind of surprised by the signing with Carlos Santana because you just kind of assumed and figured he would stay more into the American League and position himself as a DH as opposed to a field player. So, you know, if the Mariners aren't able to move him as quick, at least you kind of have something to watch in Seattle, I guess, for the fans that live there.
Yeah, yeah, I guess, you know, I mean, you know, your lineup will have Jay Bruce and Carlos Santana who can hit some home runs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're both, you know, Bruce is probably more of a 30-homer guy, but Santana will hit you over 20. You'll get a little something. Let me see what their projected lineup is here because I believe they've been updated on Roster Resource and see what they have for the Mariners going on right now. Yeah, they actually put Santana in the DH spot batting second, where Jay Bruce hits fourth, and they have him projected in left field. Crawford is seventh at shortstop, and then Omar Narváez, you know, they picked him up from the White Sox last week. He'll hit eighth and do the catching. But, you know, they still got D. Gordon hanging around. You know, it's possible he goes. I'm sure they would love to move Kyle Seager in his contract, but, you know, that's another one of those deals. I don't know if that's going to go anywhere. So I don't know if the Mariners are done yet, dude. Do you? Are you?
No, I don't think they're done yet. I think they still have a deal to make or two.
You know, and I know they'd love to move Mike Leake as well. You know, he was in a lot of early discussions on possibly going to the Phillies in this deal. And then, you know, his name ended up falling out. I can understand why the Phillies didn't want him. He's really not the top end starter they're kind of looking to add. So we'll have to see if, you know, they can find a home for him, or if they're just going to be kind of stuck with him, hoping he gets off to a fast start and, you know, they can move him along. But yeah, you know, I'll be interested to see right now how they're set up to close. I know they plugged Swarzak in as the closer because they just got him, but that's really not his forte. So I maybe they got a young pick, you know, they're looking at, or they'll add you know, one of these veteran free agents who can do the job there, because I don't see Swarzak as their closer. But yeah, Dan, looking more and more, I know we're not coming, you know, we don't have to pick anything right now, but it's looking like I might have to put my Mariners last in the AL West this year.
I mean, there's so much promise a few years back, and now that's all kind of gone out the window.
Yeah. Well, you know, the weird part was, it's like, you know, they won 89 games last year. And they decided to rip this up. So I don't know, you know. Just, yeah. But I did see the Diamondbacks are going to try to strike gold like the Cardinals did last year with Miles Mikolas. They signed Merrill Kelly to a two-year deal. Dan, looks like 2 years, $5 million, $2 million next year, $3 million the year after that. Now, Kelly's never pitched at the major league level, but he was 16-7 with a 3.60 ERA in Korea last year. So they're kind of hoping that this translates a lot like, you know, Mikolas did for the Cardinals. You know, he was a Cy Young contender. You know, and there is talk, I guess this may add a little fire to this one, Dan. Apparently Zach Greinke is on the trade market. Are we going to see the Diamondbacks move Greinke and Goldschmidt this offseason?
I mean, the experiment hasn't really worked. And while Goldschmidt has been kind of the guy in Arizona, he's also kind of been the guy who hasn't really played that often in Arizona, it seemed like.
Well, you know, I think a lot more people would have talked about Goldschmidt had he been in a bigger market. And
yeah.
You wonder...
Well,
You know, helps him.
Yeah, well, I meant more so the injuries.
You know, because, you know, I know last year he got off to a slow start, but he came back and still had, you know, close to what his numbers were. I guess I'm kind of baffled, you know, looking at the Diamondback everyday lineup. I mean, it's a solid lineup. You know, they re-signed Escobar. They'll get a healthy Jake Lamb back. David Peralta had a really good year for them last year. I guess I wonder why, you know, you want to blow it up. I mean, they should have Tajon Walker coming back from Tommy John. I know people are saying July, but it may be sooner than that. You know, even with Corbin gone, you got Greinke with Robbie Ray in the rotation and Zach Godley. That's not a terrible 1-2-3. If you add Walker back, you got a pretty good 1-4, don't you? But, you know, they're looking like they're the next team to maybe blow it up.
I don't know if they necessarily want to blow it up, but I think for both Greinke and Goldschmidt, the time to sell is now. I mean, you know, I don't want to say, you know, he's on the, you know, kind of on the end of his career, but I feel like with Zach Greinke, he's been around a lot longer than I think we all forget. And I think he's kind of coming into more the tail end of his career as a starting pitcher, you know, however you may say. But if you're going to get the value out of him before you get stuck paying, you know, $20 million for the next, I don't remember if it's 3 or 4 more years, you know, now might be the time where you can cash in and free up some of that payroll and maybe get someone in younger. You know, because you did mention that, you know, the next three guys behind him could have the potential to be really, you know, great pitchers for the Diamondbacks. And, you know, if that other guy, Shelby Miller, ever pitched, you know, how would that work out?
Yeah, except they non-tendered him, so he's a free agent.
Oh, there you go.
Oh. Yeah, I guess they were fed up with him like a lot of us were. But yeah, Greinke is 35. So yeah, he's been around a long time. I mean, he actually, you know, his rookie year was 2004. So he's coming into his 16th year. You know, and he is under contract for three more seasons. It's $34.5 million this year, and then it's $35 and $35 to end it. So he's got a big time, you know, big time number there on him. You know, while he was just 15 and 11 last year, he had a really good ERA at 3.21. And you know, on the plus side, not only makes 33 starts, he pitched 207 innings, which is, you know, huge in today's game.
Yeah.
So,
but do you see why I'm kind of leaning towards, if you're going to sell, this would be the time with him?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. You know, you know if you decide you want to move him, you know, then you definitely need to move him.
Because I think it's one of those where, you know, and I'm with you. I don't agree with blowing it up and starting all over again. But you know, I think part of the issue too is though. What they have right now isn't totally working out. You know, there's something that's not working out. And I'm not going to say that it's Zach Greinke. But, you know, kind of one of the roadblocks is his contract. You know, I honestly thought it was – obviously, I thought it was like $10 million cheaper a year. So it might be a little trickier to move than, you know, I previously thought. But, you know, at $30 million a year, $35 million, you know, you could probably get another pitcher in there, making a little bit less money, and go after another, you know, field player, position player. That's what we call him.
You know, obviously with the signing of Kelly, they'll look to put him in the rotation. And, you know, if Greinke was to go, they did pick up Matt Andreese last year from Tampa Bay, who's got starting experience. So, you know, they definitely have, you know, guys there prospect wise, I'm not sure, you know, who, you know, you never know with these guys. I know their number one pitcher is a John, I'm going to guess this is Duplantier, who, you know, is in AAA. Maybe he makes the jump and grabs that last spot. You know, you just never know about some of these guys. So,
yeah, right.
You know, I know they got
anytime you and I have pegged a Triple A guy who probably shouldn't get that fifth role, he spent another year or two in the minors.
And every time we think a guy's ready, yeah, he's not ready. He's hanging around for a while, and we don't ever see him. So, but
those are one of the hardest guys. You know, one of the other things that really hasn't worked out for the, I almost said the A's, the Diamondbacks, were the last couple of trades they made. I mean, they let Didi go for, I don't even remember who or what it was, and not that you would have known, but look at Didi has taken on the role of Derek Jeter. He's replaced Derek Jeter. And then, the Braves deal, really, I don't think it really worked out for either team. So it was kind of a wash, but, you know, that was another one that kind of, I think, hurt them a little bit. You know, didn't help them progress any.
Yeah, you know, I have to look because I don't remember who they got.
I don't remember who.
For...
I have no clue.
I don't get much. I gotta look it up here. It actually was a three-player deal. The Yankees sent Shane Green to the Tigers. The Tigers sent Domingo Leyva and Robbie Ray to the Diamondbacks, And then the Yankees got Didi.
So it did kind of work out. I didn't realize Robbie Ray was in that deal.
Yeah, in the end, the team that really got nothing was the Tigers.
Yeah.
So.
I thought it was another Adam Warren deal.
It's part of a three-team trade. He never can seem to just be traded straight up. Because when he went to the Diamondbacks from Cincinnati, it was part of a three-team deal as well. And there were some big names involved in that deal. There's Trevor Shaw in this deal. Sinshu Chu is in this deal. Brian Shaw, who was a quality reliever. Tony Sipp, another quality reliever. So there are a lot of guys in that first deal. The second one, not so much, but... Yeah, so it looks like Detroit really got shorted on that end of the deal, on the other Didi move.
I thought it was another Adam Warren trade for the Yanks.
Yeah. Almost. So, you know, we'll have to see. But, it's been really, you know, kind of interesting here right before the winter meetings. I mean, everybody's got all kinds of, you know, or at least the Mariners are making at least all kinds of moves with these other teams. And we actually got a big free agent signing. So, you know, coming in the next week, I guess we gotta really be looking forward to it, right? It should be pretty fun, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's one of the things I didn't get your take on. Obviously, the game has to be played on the field, blah, 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 one day at a time, fill in your cliches. But how does this, over, you know, after last season, how does this change your view on the NL East?
You know, I still want to wait a little bit to see who adds what, but definitely, I mean, it seems to be shaping up to be quite interesting, right? I mean, you know, it seems like, you know, the three, at least the, you know, well, I guess Josh Donaldson is an interesting add for the Braves. So every team has made a really interesting addition. You know, it's just going to kind of be which one works out for who, right?
Yeah. I mean, with all the pitching kind of going around, do you think the Braves need to add somebody?
Yeah, I definitely think they need some type of pitching help, you know, and especially kind of what, you know, everybody else is doing here. I mean, you know, the Nationals just probably made themselves the best staff in the division. You know, obviously the Mets are going to be right there with them, and the Phillies have a really good staff as well. You know, you'd probably have to put Atlanta number four in starting pitching. So, you know, the weird part is I think all four of those teams have really weak bullpens. You know, and Washington has addressed it a little bit, and obviously the Mets did with Diaz, which may give them a slight advantage here. But really, he's the only credible closer on any of those four teams. So, you know, we'll have to see what others are out there. All right, look at that. Today was a little pretty fast, but it's good. The music, we're out of here. But we'll be back tomorrow at 5:30. We'll be talking about this tomorrow then. A lot hanging out here. You want to do one look on the sportsmedia.com. See what's going on over there. Just a link over to the Facebook page and see what I like. But don't forget to add the sportsmedia. You can hunt the animal down on the video. Don't forget, go on over to sportsmedia.com and listen to the podcast and everything.
Sportsmedia.